Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. I always get these kind of confused a little bit, so I put them all on the same show, and so we could just really be confused about it. No, it's MACO, the Montana Association of Counties, and MECA, the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. First off, we'll be chatting with Commissioner Gordon Oakers. He's out of Roosevelt County there, president of MACO now, newly elected. They just had their convention last week. Lots to catch up on: federal land ownership, property taxes. Right now, we've got a government shutdown, federal government shutdown. We'll talk about that and how that might impact our counties a bit later on. I think it's Mark Lambrecht who could be joining us, maybe Dee Dee Isaacs from the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. Their annual convention is now, and so we'll catch up to date with them a bit later on today on Voices of Montana. President of Montana Association of Counties, it's MACO president, Oakers, Gordon Oakers, Roosevelt County Commissioner, and good morning, Gordon. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Appreciate that. Congratulations on getting there. Of course, this process started a little while ago. Let's catch up to date. First of all, MACO, you guys have been around a long, long time. Why don't you tell us, what's the impact of your organization?
Sure. I'm Roosevelt County Commissioner Gordon Oakers. I was elected president of the Montana Association of Counties during the 116th annual conference. We've been around since 1909. It was set up back to help counties with state government and keep all the commissioners informed. MACO represents all 56 counties. We're all counties are on board. It provides a unified voice on statewide issues that affect our local government, infrastructure, public safety, economic development. So it's a pretty important organization within the county.
Yeah, and I would encourage people to go to the website and find out. It's mtcounties.org, and find out what their policies are, because they're listed there. They're well detailed there. So, it's very informative. Gordon, I appreciate you coming on the program here. What were some of the things? What were the heaviest weights that you guys had to deal with as commissioners in that last conference?
Well, this last conference, our first thing we did, we elected myself as president, but we also have our executive committee was all elected. I'll go through those. They're kind of statewide. Ross Butcher is our past president from Fergus County. Randy Brodell is our urban rep from Flathead County. And then newly elected Scott Miller, he's our second vice president of Carbon County. And then Juanita Vieiro, she's our first vice president from Missoula. And Joette Woods is immediate past president. And then Jason Stroff from Custer County is our fiscal officer. So our executive committees throughout the whole state, from the big counties to the little counties, and that's why MACO's so effective. There's a lot of issues with every county. It depends on the size to what your issues are. And MACO kind of represents every county. And we don't do something that hurts one county for a big county. It's going to hurt a little county. We try to make policies and procedures that help the whole state.
You know, and that's true. I really like that, too. And you can see that when you guys are, at convention. I've been to a few of them, and you're deliberating this thing. But it also shows up, I think, in the fact that your bylaws have you guys rotating rather quickly through, those executive positions. So there's plenty of opportunity for people from various counties to become a part of MACO leadership.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And that's what we want. We want to keep everybody involved and keep communications open through the state back to the counties.
It's got to get hard sometimes. I guess I'm thinking about, the Glendive Wind Farm, right? There's a citizen move. It's becoming rather significant, and they're worried about some height structures there. They feel that the county is not super prepared as far as the plat and zoning goes. So that's one area. But you go over to another area of the state, and And they may really, really want wind development or other kinds of energy projects. Talk about that dynamic, Gordon, and how you manage through all that.
Well, yeah, and there's, energy policies in each county has to have their own zoning and regulations, and we have to have some offsets and on these wind farms, and we want to encourage all forms of energy, but they still have to be regulated and controlled to a certain extent to keep the environment safe and keep our Montana the way we want it with wide open spaces. And but so it's all the above energy issues, and every county has their own policies and procedures. They have to go by what the local people want. But as a statewide, we kind of try to keep it all on the up and up. And our land use, we have a land use lawyer within Mako. She helps a lot with different policies and guides us. You know, each county has their own attorney that has to take care of stuff and land use policies. So it's up to the counties to do a lot of this stuff with the support of Mako.
How are the budgets? I mean, I know Montana, we've got pretty good economy here, but we're not isolated from the national economy, which, you know, and that's not to say we're not struggling in some areas as well.
Yeah, you know, the budgets for county budgets, we're on the 15-10-420, which restrict our budgets to half the rate of inflation for the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. That's going to change now with SB 117, which we can talk about later. But, you know, the budgets, it depends on if you're a growing community or not. You know, if you get in the mountains where the new development is happening and you're getting this new taxes, your budgets are sitting pretty good. Some of the central counties that don't have a lot of tourist trade, don't have oil, gas, or coal, they're hurting. And then the ones on our end, which is the eastern end, we have the oil, which is tremendous for our budget. It counts for about 20% of Roosevelt County's income through our oil revenue.
Gordon Olkers is with us again. He's president of the Montana Association of Counties, and as he mentioned, 116th edition. That's it's remarkable. It really is, but I think it's very valuable too. He's also a Roosevelt County Commissioner. I want to talk about property taxes. I had to imagine those things were on the plate. Property taxes, wind development, or energy development. What's the discussion amongst our commissioners?
You know, property taxes were huge. I was fortunate enough to be on the governor's task force for property taxes. And there is no easy answer. When you only have a two-stool-legged state with just property tax and income taxes, which property taxes is how the county government funds itself, and income taxes is how the state government finances themselves. So property taxes, when the property values of homes went up so much 4 years ago, and then 2 years ago also, becoming about 80% of our pay for property taxes, It really put a strain on property tax users. So the Senate Bill 117 was put into effect, and House Bill 231 and Senate Bill 542 property tax things were put in for the $400 rebate, and then The homes are going to, your main home is going to be taxed at a less rate, and long-term rentals will be taxed at a different rate, and short-term rentals will go up, and if your second homes, these big homes, about 20% of the homes are owned by outside of Montana people, their tax rates are going to go up a little bit. So it's a tax shift. And it depends on which end you're on the shift, if you like it or if you don't like it.
What do you guys feel about it? I mean, do you feel like the counties need to address this? They want the legislature to readdress this? Is it fine? Let's let it roll for a bit?
Well, it's something that we just have to keep on working on. It's such a complicated, complex issue, and it seems like it just keeps on getting more complicated. It doesn't get simplified whatsoever, but it's something that has to keep on working on, or we need to bring in a new source of revenue.
Yeah. Do you see wild swings? I mean, as you said, 80% of your county's general fund revenue is in property taxes. Do you see wild swings in that kind of funding, which I imagine is...
Well, Well, in our area, which is the eastern Montana, we don't have that, like the growth like the Bozemans and Missoulas and Great Kalispell has. So it varies by your tax makeup within your county. You know, Yellowstone County with refineries, their property taxes are going to go up and homeowners is going to go down. But 4 years ago, when income from taxes from your homes went up, them centrally assessed and bigger industries went down. So, you know, now they're coming back up, probably a little bit more than they went down. So it's a shift.
And Gordon Olker is with us, a Roosevelt County Commissioner, President of the Montana Association of Counties, just had their conference last week getting a status update. We'll be joined by probably Mark Lambrick, maybe it's Dee Dee Isaacs from MECA, the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. I'm gonna get on to energy here a little bit. There's a lot of things I want to talk about. Maybe I should stay with taxes a little bit. Are you finding it difficult to understand where the federal government is going to play or how they're going to play a part in counties' finances going forward? Because it seems like it's been all over the place.
Yeah, and we deal mostly with state issues on property taxes. It's a state function. Like say with these two bills that passed, we'll see how they all come out. And then we changed the SB 117, which revised our property taxes, how the counties get their money. It used to be that half the rate of inflation. Now they're going to switch to, we get the full rate of inflation over the past 3 years, but they're capping the new growth on property taxes. That's going to be the biggest change. So that'll affect the big counties. 75% of class four properties, it'll be valued at 75%. So it kind of caps the newly taxable value. And so that's going to be a different way that counties get their property tax payments. So we'll see how that works out. The legislation really wanted to limit some of these spending on the counties, which we feel as counties take care of our budgets real well. We're closest to the taxpayers and we're more receptive to the taxpayers. And yeah, we have to do the public safety, the jails, mental health. You know, so we have to take care of all the roads. There's just a lot of stuff that each county deals with every day.
Well, that's why I love our system of local control, because you're bumping in, literally bumping elbows with the people who you're serving. The Montana Electric Cooperatives Association, their conference, their annual conference going on right now. We'll check in with them and see what's on their plate here in just a little bit. The Montana Association of Counties, MACO, just had their conference last week, their annual conference, set some policies, elected new administrators and executives. And Gordon Olkers is with us here. He is a Roosevelt County Commissioner, been there in that seat for 10 years, previously mayor of Culberson, some experience there as well, now president of the Montana Association of Counties. 30%, Gordon, and 30% of Montana land is federally owned, right? And so, I'm always curious as to how you guys deal with the heavy hand of the federal government, but yet still try to maintain some local control. That 30% leads to the question of PILT payments, which is, you know, payments in lieu of taxes because of that federally owned property. And that number has been going down over the years, as I understand it as well. I want to ask you that question. Are PILT payments still sufficient? Do we have increasing conflicts with authority with the feds?
Yeah, the PILT payments for some of these counties is huge. You know, up in this corner, there's some that are rely heavily on PILT payments. And MACO has a commissioner, Todd Devlin, from Prairie County, who is a PILT payment guru. I mean, he's just a guy that knows a lot about PILT payments and has been fighting for the counties in Montana at a national level. He's on our NACO, National Association of Counties, boards for PILT payments. I mean, it's that important that, we send a whole delegation to Washington to fight for and to make Congress people in Washington understand PILT payments and how important they are to a state of Montana and all the counties that are within Montana. So, you know, like my county in Roswell County, we don't get really any pill payments. We don't have any payment in lieu of taxes. But there's some counties that rely heavily on them. So it's a constant fight, a constant battle to get fully funded pill payments.
Let's take Skip's question as we have time here. Skip listening in Hamilton, KLYQ. Good to hear from you, Citizen Skip. You're on the air with Commissioner Gordon Olkers.
Oh, thank you very much, Tom. And Gordon, thanks for coming on. A lot of people don't realize how important MACO is in this state. And I know our commissioners, they look forward to going to the meetings, not just because they get to go on a junket, but because they actually feel like they have a something to say to an important group. And so I'm wondering, in your meetings and when you have, like, your convention, when, for instance, you were elected, when you go over subjects to, you know, to put at the top of the list to work on, do you have any kind of a problem, or how do you deal with the fact that some of the commissioners are going to come from Democrat counties versus Republican counties? Does that become a problem in any way? Do you have a voting situation where it's party line or anything like that? Or do you all look at it differently, like not hang a red or a blue flag on it when you make a decision what to go lobby about?
Good question, Skip.
How that works.
Yeah, you know, that is, thanks for the question. MACO is set up pretty uniquely. We have MACO committees, you know, Agriculture Committee, we have Community Economic Development Committees, we have Health and Human Services, Land Use, Energy, Justice and Public Safety, Transportation. So each one of those committees meet, and they kind of decide the tone of what's going to come out of them, what we do for legislation. So it's kind of them committees, it don't matter if you're Republican or Democrat, they work out what they want to come out of the committee, and then they instruct the MACO staff and executives what they want, and then we work on that from there. So it's a committee-driven decision-making.
And I think at the county level, too, especially at that county commissioner's office, I mean, you don't have 12 commissioners. It generally, you know, it's 3 to 5, but more often than not, it's 3.
Yeah, it's 3, and we're all, like in Roosevelt County, we're nonpartisan.
Yeah.
So we're not Republican or Democrat. We're nonpartisan, and that's a great way. You know, some counties are partisan, are Republican or Democrat, but we are nonpartisan, and quite a few are that way. So it's more on driven on what your county needs and what your county wants.
Yeah, there's less politics at that level, and I'm not a big fan of nonpartisan elections, but... I am a big fan of that local control, and I see that. I mean, you guys are focused on your constituents there at the county level more than politics.
Very much so. Very much so.
Let's get on to energy here, because I know counties need economic development, but I also know that they, you know, some are struggling with the tax base, as we had kind of noticed, shrinking tax base. Energy is kind of a crapshoot right now. I don't think people know if we're going to have enough. We certainly know there's going to be a lot of demand. What do the commissioners think? What's the dynamic in your world?
Well, like I say, we have an energy committee that deals with a lot of this, and then we also have a oil, gas, and coal county association, which is not part of MACO, but it's associated with MACO. It's kind of an offshoot of it. And we had a lot of meetings with Northwest Energy in the past, you know, baseload power in Montana, where we get in these December days where we have to pay huge amounts for electricity. We need to have that baseload power, and it's got to come from either coal or gas. You know, with gas-fired plants like the one in Laurel, we need, you know, and MACO is an all-of-the-above association. We want wind, we want solar, we're talking about these pelletized nuclear facilities. They're probably 10 to 15 years out, but if we have the grid system, we have the electrical lines, let's put in a new source of power, because if we don't have that baseload power, wind and solar don't cut it when it's December and January in Montana. We need to have that baseload power. So we keep on talking that, and Roosevelt County, Richland County, is is right in the thick of things with oil. Kraken Oil, which is an oil company in this area, they're the number one producers of oil in Montana, and most of it comes out of the eastern end of Montana here, which Richland County is number one, and Roosevelt County just became number two in oil production in Montana. And that's due to Kraken Oil and Phoenix Oil. They're doing these oil, they go down a mile and they go horizontal 3 miles, up to 4 miles, but they're doing a lot of 3 mile legs, and they're doing three wells to a site with one for production water. So we like that because then you don't have that production water semis on our county roads. They're just injecting it right back in the ground with, you know, three or four wellheads on the same pad, which reduces the footprint of these oil companies. And it's just really helping our economy in this area and our county budgets, and the local schools are affected, and it just helps everybody tremendously.
Roads and bridges. How are we looking?
Roads and bridges.
Yeah.
We used to buy scoria for $2 a ton. Now we buy it for $18. We used to buy crushed gravel for $6, and now we're buying it for $14 a ton. You know, it just, all those expenses add up on county roads. They're expensive to maintain, $500,000 graders. And if you're tied to half the rate of inflation on your budget and you don't have much growth, it's a struggle on the budgets.
Right. And we're falling behind. And, you know, part of that is the Fed. Part of that's the state as well. But it seems the counties get the blame for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the counties on property taxes, the counties get 35% to 40% of the money, and the schools get 60%. So, you know, the schools get most of the property taxes, where the counties get that 35-38%, depends on what county you're in, of your property taxes that you pay within the counties. Most of it goes to the schools and school financing and school funding.
I think if you're cutting a budget, you should have a county commissioner alongside, because I think they get it in a lot of ways. Less than 30 seconds, seat at the table. I think that's one of the things that you guys have been working on, was to make sure that as an organization, local government, at the county commission level, is being heard on these federal land questions and energy and things like that.
Yeah, and that's what MACO, with their legislative lobbying with our executive director, Eric Brysom, and Jason Riddle, our deputy director, and Karen Alley and Chantel, they do a great job of lobbying for Montana at a local level. And we have a great contingent that goes to our National Association of Counties, which do the lobbying there. So we try to get the word out and try to make sure our counties are strong.
Thanks for your public service, Gordon. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Gordon Olkers, again, Commissioner of Roosevelt County and President for the Montana Association of Counties. Well, government funding lapsed today. White House lawmakers couldn't reach a spending deal. We'll talk about that here tomorrow as we have open phones. And Austin Knudsen, also from Culbertson area, Roosevelt County. He's Montana's Attorney General, stopping in studio on Friday. Welcome back from Montana. For Montana, it's Voices of Montana. Let's head over to Great Falls. As I've been mentioning here, the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association has been having their annual convention, policies and policy galore, actually, discussed. Ryan Hall is Communications Director for MECA and joins us now from Great Falls. Good morning, Ryan. How you doing, sir?
Doing good. We miss having you up here this year, Tom.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't in the cards this year. And I think it's the first time, like in 6 years, that we haven't been there. So, but I got Joe Lackman there. And Joe's already got some good interviews coming our way, too. So that's cool. You run into Joe, haven't you?
Absolutely. He's done a great job. And we've been feeding him a lot of folks, a lot of new content that we haven't got to do in past years, because he's here in some of the afternoon. So I'm anxious for people to hear all the interviews that he's got and some of the messages coming out of this meeting.
Yeah, he's a bright one too, a young Montanan. So what's on the plate? I mean, what's the heaviest haul, so to speak?
You know, we've still talking about our wildfire mitigation plans, and then been talking a lot about reliable, affordable electricity going forward. Looking at the grid and the need for reliable power as we move forward with ever increasing demands, and trying to figure out how to make all those things mesh together. So been a lot of our conversation. We had Mike Milburn from the Northwest Power Conservation Council, and it's been a great speech this morning with him really telling people what they're working on in the Northwest when it comes to power and power management. And so it's been really informative.
Are we going to have enough power, Ryan?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, Tom. Yeah. If you could answer that, you probably wouldn't be on the radio this morning. You'd be in the White House talking to somebody.
Well, I say we yes. I say yes, but we got to get there, you know?
Yeah, the answer is we can.
Yeah.
Right now, we do, but as things increase and going forward, we can. But we've got to do some things to make sure that we will. And so that's kind of what we're talking about now, is what electric co-ops have to prepare for and how they can going forward. So I'm confident we'll get there, but there's some work to be done.
There are a few, but not many, cooperative entities that do some production, that produce some energy. It's becoming more common, I think, with wind and especially solar. How much of a load in terms of production can our electric cooperatives handle and contribute to this?
Well, and that's the key question, too. And a lot of it comes down to capital. You know, mm-hmm. can they do it? It's one thing. But when you're a not-profit electric cooperative that's member-owned, what can you take on and what can you afford to take on and not overburden your members? That's the very first question that has to be done. And you're right. There's some wind. There's some solar. Flathead Electric has a biomass generator out there at the landfill. Some folks are using some dam power. I know Fall River has their own dam power there. So there's a lot of opportunity, but it's just that risk management of making sure you don't overburden your members with the cost as well. And then you have the capacity question. You generate it, but how do you get it where it needs to go? And that's the next big issue facing the state.
And aren't those there's some regional providers and regional organizations that are really trying to overlook and oversee more production from the electric cooperatives? I mean, I guess I'm thinking, if these co-ops become a larger co-op, so to speak, and kind of then pool that capital resource?
Well, you know, some of that's already happening. If you look at mm-hmm. Basin Electric Power yep. Cooperative, yep. they serve most of the co-ops on the east side, and they are a co-op. So our co-ops have gone together with them. They own a lot of generation. And so that's already happening on that side and has been for decades, with Basin being a power producer there. So there are models out there that work, but again, with the cost of things nowadays and with the capacity being needed, there's a lot of studies and work to be done there. But, co-ops working together to generate has certainly been something that's worked together in the past.
Ryan Hall with us, Communications Director, Montana Electric Cooperatives Association, and also producer of what's the name of the magazine? Rural Montana, right?
Yes. Rural Montana.
Yeah, and you do such a great job with that. You do. And I haven't chatted with you in a little while. We used to actually kind of do a little show based off that magazine. How's it doing? How's it looking? What's new in that?
It's going great. We've had some great things. Next month, I'm really excited with October. A gentleman you know very well, Doug Hardy. Retiring in November.
Oh.
So we did a story with him and got to really see the personal side of Doug, which a lot of people don't. They know him as the electric guru in the state, and he's amazing at that. But we got to talk to him about retiring and spending time with his grandchildren, and got to talk to him about what life will be like after 50 years in electric co-ops and now retiring.
You know, and that's one thing I miss a lot. Tell Doug I said hello and all those folk. I mean, if you want to be in and around a convention with salt of the earth people, that's what's going on right there, Great Falls, with the Mecca convention. What's the transmission looking like? As we talk about production, I think a big part of electric cooperatives is making sure your transmission lines are up to speed. And then we're looking at the grid nationally. What kind of role do our cooperatives need to play in shoring up this grid and making sure we have adequate transmission?
Again, those are conversations that are going on, because transmission is such an interconnected thing.
Yeah.
There's Northwestern power lines, there's Basin Electric power lines, some individual co-ops own transmission lines. And so that's the question, is where's the power going to come from? How much is going where, how do we get it there? Those are all interlaced conversations, because you can generate all the power you want, but you have to have a way to get it places. You can have all the transmissions you want, but you have to be able to generate power to put on those lines. And so those are all the conversations that are going on now as we look to the future to see what the answer is.
Where would the co-ops lean? I guess I'm thinking about Grid United, and they're building this nice big east-west high-tech transmission line, but it's a boutique line. They own it, and so if you're going to run electricity across it, it'll cost you, so to speak. What do you like that model, or how will that model serve the co-ops, or what, as you look down the road, do you think will serve the co-ops?
Yeah, you know, and it's tough to answer the question. I don't mean to be silly when you ask.
I know, right?
A lot of things we're still trying to figure out. It's certainly an interesting model. We've had a lot of talks with Northwestern and Grid United. And worked with them on some legislation and things to benefit everything. So there's certainly some possibilities there, but, you know, like I said, everyone's still trying to figure out how all the pieces fit together and how that'll work. So there's potential there, but we're still trying to figure out exactly where that lies. And, you know, the answer could be different for different co-ops, because every co-op is beholden to its members, and what works in northeastern Montana may not work in southwestern Montana. So there's a lot of different things for each individual co-op to look at and figure out what it needs. And, you know, the needs of a Yellowstone Valley are very different than the needs of a Golden West in Webo.
And I'm glad, I mean, figure it out. Take some time on this. I've said I felt we've made a irrational rush to renewables, and we're seeing some problems stack up because of that. I'm going to talk about alternatives now and how you guys view alternatives, but part of the alternative energy, and I know baseload is important here, part of that is mandates from the federal government, which I'm hoping that this administration pulls back on, because I don't think they've been leading us in the right direction. We can take our time and solve this problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, electric co-ops forever have been an all-of-the-above strategy business model. That's what we believe in. I know we've talked to you about it numerous times before. And that's the key. There's a place for alternatives and renewables. They certainly help in the summer when some usage is high to have the wind and the solar. But the problem is in Montana at 6 a.m. in December when it's 20 below, the sun's not shining, the wind's typically not blowing. And that base load generation, which is becoming less of, that is the key component, whether you're talking now, past, or going forward. We have to have a strong base load, and then it can be complemented and supplemented with those wonderful renewables that do great things, and good green power. And don't forget that when we talk base load in Montana, we're also talking dams, which are renewable and actually reusable. Same cubic foot of water can generate a lot of power. So, you know, don't forget that there are green base load sources too.
Yeah, I know. And that's another story. We've chatted with you guys over the years, incredulously, that they would want to take away that clean, reusable energy. And it just, it baffles me that our energy policy is not, nice and tight. And I know people have different ideas about things like that. I wanted to talk about co-op growth, because I know there's people coming into Montana. Some co-ops are growing. Still, there's other areas that are struggling. What have you seen in terms of electric co-op growth?
My favorite quote, and I know I've told this to you before, Tom, I think you like it as well, is if you've seen one co-op, you've seen one co-op.
Right. Yeah.
And that's so true. So we've got co-ops along the High Line that are no-growth co-ops. They're growing by 10, 15 people a year. And then we've got Yellowstone Valley that's among the largest growing co-op over the last 5 years in the country. And then you've got, up northeastern Sydney, they're seeing some growth. And you're seeing, Flathead Valley obviously is booming right now. And so depending on the co-op you see, some of them are experiencing incredible growth, very high percentage, very fast growth rate. But again, Yellowstone Valley in the Billings-Huntley area is a big example of this. And then you've got others that are seeing very little growth and are just trying to keep things going the way they are and keep it maintained. And then you've got others that are looking at big loads coming in, potentially data centers, things like that, that could double or quadruple the load very quickly with just one load. So it's very interesting to see the growth and in what sectors, some residential, some commercial. Very interesting across the state. They're all dealing with very different growth.
I love it. I really do. Ryan Hall with us, communications director for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. Mitigation plans. You guys were successful in getting a piece across the legislature this last session that dealt with wildfire liability, but it also required co-ops to form fire mitigation plans. How's that going?
It's going great. So right now, a lot of our co-ops are doing the required public hearings and public comment periods. And a lot of them are working on their plans. Those plans have to be done and approved by the end of the year, which is coming much quicker. I don't know who allowed it to be October already, but yeah, that has happened. So we are working in earnest on it. Several of our co-ops, I think it was 15 when we passed the legislation, already had some wildfire plan. So they were just tweaking it to match the new legislation. Yeah. Others were working on it, and then a couple started after the legislation passed, but everyone seems to be on target. I think we're all going to have them done by the end of the year, and it's going to be a very positive thing for members, because not only does it provide that liability protection, which protects the co-ops from bankruptcy, but it also guarantees that they're out there maintaining those lines and mitigating those wildfire risks so we don't have the problems to begin with, and everyone wins when there's less fires.
You guys did a great job working on that package, and I think it's a pretty tight package, too, and I'm glad it's enacted now here. Is there anything big on your plate right now?
Oh, there's always something, Tom. I have not found the day where electric co-ops get to relax yet. Right now, we're working on a couple of different things. Obviously, pushing those mitigation plans to the mm-hmm. finish line. The other thing we're looking at real hard right now, we've got some postal issues and concerns. There's co-ops, hasn't happened in Montana much, but it's happening across the country. I'm sure it's going to come here, where the postal delays are making it so people aren't getting their bills on time. We've had issues with delivery of rural Montana. We've had there's a huge postage increase that just happened in for periodicals, and there's a rate case going on right now, a regulation case, excuse me, for the U.S. Postal Service, and we're weighing in on that at a local level, and with NRACA, our national group, are weighing in on that as well and trying to get those postal regulations to be a little more favorable to nonprofit periodicals and try to kind of mitigate some of those costs going forward, because it's so important to communicate with our members. That's the best way to communicate with our members. So we're trying to make sure to keep those costs as reasonable as we can going forward.
Love the co-op model. Like what you guys do an awful lot, Ryan. And I know you guys keep engaged with your members and the folks who are running the co-ops, too. So, again, give them my love, will you? And my appreciation, Ryan.
Absolutely. We appreciate you always being here when you can. And if not, getting us on the air and always talking with us and getting our issues out there. You're definitely a friend of the co-ops, and we appreciate that very
much. Well, it was great catching up with you, too, and we'll talk some more down the road. Ryan Hall with the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.